Welcome to the Conscious Living Podcast, conversations to educate, empower, and enlighten our world. An uplifting and inspiring series of conversations and talks with your host, Jackie Woodside. We are educating minds, empowering lives, and enlightening souls to create a world where love prevails. In this engaging podcast, we deliver exciting, positive, transformative talks and teachings designed to elevate your life. Now, let's join our host, Jackie Woodside, for this week's session.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Conscious Living Podcast, where we are here to educate, empower, and enlighten our world. You know, I just can't say how much I love this time every week where I get to sit with people who are so committed to the way that we live life and to creating a world that is educated, empowered, and enlightened, and just the opportunity to meet such extraordinary people from all walks of life who are interesting and just doing such extraordinary work, living such extraordinary lives. And thank you to all of you who join the podcast every week, who send me messages on social media and via email. It's just so great to be a part of this movement of awakening. And today's guest, Angel Deer, is someone who I'm just excited to dive in and talk more about for a number of reasons. First of all, because he has a really sexy European accent, and that's just always fun. Secondly, how's that, Angel, for part of
him? Again.
Bet you've never been introduced that way before, right? Secondly, because he's from upstate New York. He lives in upstate New York. He's not from upstate New York, but he lives in upstate New York, and that's near and dear to my heart. Thirdly, because he's a holistic health practitioner and in shamanism, and I always find that topic interesting. He's also committed to the study and the practice of being a beekeeper and has a bee sanctuary. So I want to hear more about that. And he's just interested in, has such a wide breadth of things around conscious and holistic living that I find so interesting. So I know we're just going to hit on so many interesting topics today. And not only all of that, but he's expecting a brand new baby in about another month. So he's primed to welcome a new conscious life into his world. So Angel Deer, thank you for being on the Conscious Living Podcast. Do you mind just saying a little bit more about yourself, sharing more about your background so our listeners can get to know you a little bit more?
Yeah, thank you, Jackie, for the introduction here, and it's good to be with you. Yeah, I think, you know, I was always, since I was little, very interested about what we call consciousness.
Yeah.
And the awakening of it. And I was always this kid that would go around and spend hours looking at a piece of grass, at an insect, at a flower. And I felt it could speak to me. I could be in communication with it, and I could get wisdom from it. And I think all children kind of share this connection to the magical world,
yeah.
A world that is not just a physical reality, but there is more to it. And after over 20 years in the corporate world and building my own businesses and, you know, being a CEO of corporations and my own startups, at some point, you know, I went through a really big transformation and went back, I guess, into that magic, but through the lens of shamanism, animism, and conscious living in many ways, that I felt my life was very disconnected from it. And, you know, it led me to, you know, open and create the New York Bee Sanctuary, and then the sanctuary, which is this place here where we help people reconnect to, I guess, themselves.
Yeah, tell me about the sanctuary that you run in the Catskills of upstate New York. Say a little bit more about that. And also, I'm such a bad interviewer when I ask two questions at the same time, but I'm going to anyway. I'd also love to hear more about your business background, your business career. So a little bit more about the startups that you did, your corporate background. And then, yeah, so maybe start with that one. You know, your business background, and then, yeah, I mean, wow, from corporate startups to shamanism and the work that you're doing in the Catskills.
Yeah, I was trained as a veterinarian. So I have a PhD in veterinary medicine. So that's really where everything started.
You don't
started,
look nearly old enough to have lived that many lives, Angel, I must say.
Well, I'm 50, so it's been many lives, I guess, already. But I was always fascinated by science in some ways, because I always found in science not the answer, but the mystery. And that was my quest in it. And, you know, I ended up, you know, studying as a vet and, you know, got my PhD. But then I kind of shifted my interest. I guess it was, you know, a lot of the voices of society and maybe my family and things that were telling me, you need to get a job. And not that a vet is not a good job, right? But I started working for big corporations. And I spent, you know, almost 15 years in different roles in France, in England, and then in the US. And that's how I arrived in New York City. But in that process, I also started my own ventures. And that was kind of my last experience there. I, you know, run a big company. I started with a friend. We ended up raising over $50 million for it, which was, you know, a really big success.
What kind of a company did you start with him?
It was an online startup that was selling baby products. So products for new mothers. We were selling, really good brands at really good price. Basically, we wanted mothers to be able to have the best brands, but be able to afford it. So the whole model was built around that.
A veterinarian selling products to new mothers. Somehow I'll bet you're really good at marketing too.
I mean, that was the target, right? For someone that was not a dad and definitely
a veterinary background, and you're selling products to new mothers.
And my co-founder, my friend Christoph, and we started together, you know, literally in our apartment in New York, but within a few years we had 200 employees.
Wow.
And we became this big startup. We were on TV, and you know, we were awarded and for the Entrepreneur of the Year awards, and Mayor Bloomberg get us a trophy. So it was very successful, let's say, on a business perspective. But what was happening in the meantime, on the internal process, was a disconnection from, I can't really name it, but I guess from my true self, from something, there was something else that was calling me. It was invisible to me what I was. I just knew that what I was doing was not my life. And so after 15 or 20 years, running companies for people or running my own businesses, I had a big, falling apart right after the Entrepreneur of the Year awards. I, you know, came out of stage, fall down, and had this massive things coming to me saying, this is not your life. And so I left everything and I went on a quest for many years in India first, and then in South America and other places, where I started to search for meaning, search for answers to questions that were daunting to me, which is, why are we here? What is this life about? What does it mean to be human? How do we connect with each other? How do we relate in a good way? What does it mean to be really successful? Because I had experienced one kind of success, but it felt like the opposite inside of me. A lot of turmoils, a lot of internal battles. And, you know, I worked at Mother Teresa for a long time, and that's how I started. In fact, to say, you know, it's not going to be about me. I'm going to be in service of others. So I live in Calcutta, in the Home for the Dying, which was one of the first home Mother Teresa opened. And that, shattered my heart, opened it, changed my perspective on spirituality and service and the meaning of life.
But do you mind answering, how did it change your perspective on spirituality?
You know, I think it brought it, I think it's a rabbi story that says, the students are asking him, I say, why do you keep telling us, rabbi, teacher, to put the teaching on top of our heart all the time? He said, well, it's when your heart is going to break, they're going to fall in. And, you know, working with people, the Home for the Dying was one of the first home Mother Teresa opened. And it was about dying with dignity. She was really struck by the fact most people were dying in the streets with nobody around them. And so our role, our mission was to find people that were not well, to bring them in, to wash them, to feed them, to take care of them like babies, basically, because they were usually disabled and out of life, and to be there for their passing, to hold their hands when they were passing, to brush their hair, to, you know, it's very much, there is a lot of beautiful stories in the ancient cosmology about elders being babies and preparing for the next cycle. And there was those moments where, yeah, I felt that this life had complete meaning and it was not about me anymore at all. It was about another being that needed that connection. And I'd also had what some people call a spiritual awakening or a moments of deep connection to God or the universe or forces that were just speaking through me for weeks, and hearing voices, what people would call maybe crazy, but very clear directions about what my life was and what my life should be. And out of all places, you know, through a Christ on the cross, which I was not raised Christian, and in India, in the slums.
Right.
You know, it's like this weird place, I guess, for getting an awakening.
Right.
Or maybe not, right? And yeah, my life took a very big turn. And I came back to the US and then started to study with ancient healers, masters. So I started to really find them in the depths of the Amazon, in Brazil and in Peru, and Native American reservations, and then, you know, other kind of teachers, right?
Wow.
And the, I guess the path appeared, this vision of the sanctuary, this vision of bringing people to those ancient roots that we're all looking for, I believe. And we started to teach people about it, to invite people to reconnect to themselves. And a lot of people, I guess, resonate with that story and started finding me and coming, you know, for learning.
Wow. That's amazing. I have to go back and ask about you walking away from your company. Mm. Did you and Christoph end on good terms, or was he?
We had a few tough years. Christoph stayed, you know, I mean, he stayed in that business line, and now he has another startup that is even more successful in many countries. Yeah. And we're a really good friend now. But there was, you know, a few years that were very challenging. I think it was challenging for everyone, for the investors, for my partner, for my family, for my friends, because everybody thought, well, you're so successful, yeah, on paper, at least. It's not like we were millionaires or anything, but you raise big monies from big VCs in the Silicon Valley. This is like a dream thing for an entrepreneur, right?
You've quote unquote made it.
You made it-ish, yeah, right? And you're quitting. And I think, you know, everybody was very worried, and starting by my mother, right? Starting by my parents, they were like, what's going on with you? And I could not explain it. The only thing I could answer was like, this is not my life.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you mean? I was like, this, I just know it's not me. And like, what is it? So what is your life? I was like, what? That's the problem. I don't know.
I don't know. Right. But it's not this.
But it's not this.
Wow.
Mm. You know, I laugh about it, smile about it, but it was daunting. And
yeah, I'm sure. When you were like in the early weeks, even months of kind of walking around Calcutta, did you regret it? Did you have doubts?
Never. I think when I, you know, I took a one-way ticket to Kolkata, India, and with, you know, I landed and took a taxi and went to Mother Teresa directly. Someone, you know, gave me the address, and I just banged at the door. One of the sister there opened the door and just like, hello, how are you? It's like, good. I say, I'm coming to help. She said, great. And I ask her, I say, how long do I stay? I say, you know, some people stay for a day and some people stay their whole life. So you can stay anything in between. And I was in.
That was it. So did you live, do they like just take you in and you live there?
Yes. I mean, I live right next door in a small, you know, very cheap hotel. It didn't feel right to stay in a nice accommodation because of, yeah, the people I was working with, right? I had the money to definitely, especially in India, to stay in a nicer hotel, but I wanted to stay in a very simple, basic accommodation. You know, there was no showers, just you know, literally a bucket and a tap for water to wash yourself, and one tiny bed and very small room in a very noisy and not very clean insect covered accommodation. And it was, you know, a bit daunting, but I was like, I'm doing this. I'm going to leave as with the people.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, people, I think especially my family was quite worried at the time. Sure. To be honest.
Did they think you had had some kind of a mental health break?
Yeah, they would like question if I was okay.
Yeah.
And in fact, I never felt so alive that when
right.
I arrived.
Right.
I felt like I was free. I literally left with one backpack. That's always was left of my life. I sold everything else, let go of my apartment.
You did. You sold it all.
I literally, my backpack was everything that was left from my previous life. No more car, no more insurance, no more, like literally I have this photo that I took. This is my life now. This is this backpack. And yeah, you know, there's something, not that everybody should do that, or that is what I recommend people to do.
Sure, sure. That's
what worked for me, but then I, you know, I ended up going to Nepal and hiked the Himalayas and doing other things. But I remember being in the Himalayas walking and feeling like I finally was in charge of my life.
Yeah.
I finally had this feeling that everything was possible. It, in fact, where I got all the visions for the New York Bee Sanctuary, for many things I've done later on in my life, came from that time alone in the Himalayas hiking. So I think it was needed. You know, in many ways, in native traditions, you go on those vision quests. You go alone in the forest and you take time off the tribe, off the community, off the noise, in order to hear your own insanity, your own noise, and find clarity, what is true to you. And
what a gift.
I felt very alive because of that, because finally I could see, right?
What a gift.
Yeah.
Angel, do you remember how old you were when you did that?
Yes, I was 35.
35. I was kind of calculating it in my head, and that was the number I came up with.
Was
35. Yeah. Wow, what an extraordinary tale. And you said that that was when the idea of the bee sanctuary came to you. Had you previously had any association or relationship with bees before that?
No, because I always loved bees.
Okay.
And honey, like I guess everybody.
Who doesn't love honey, right? Yeah.
Right. But I was living in New York City, right? So contact with bees were not really that often. And yeah, I was, you know, I remember still like it was yesterday, I was hiking. So I was doing one of the, you know, Himalayas trek with my guide. And it's pretty, you know, high altitude and difficult. And we just stopped to, you know, rest for a few minutes and drink some water. And here there was this big flower next to me and these bees landing on it. And I heard the bees. I mean, I know it might sound crazy for some people. The bees told me, it's like, why is there botanical garden for the plants? There is no places for the bees in the same way. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, we need a place where we can be safe. We need a place for water, for shelter, for food, for protection. And I had this vision of creating a nonprofit that would create bee safe sanctuaries in the country. And I think, you know, this is now 10 years. I came back and started it up with a few friends. And I think 10 years later now, we have over 600 bee sanctuaries in the country, in the United States.
Really?
And over 100 abroad, because then it expanded. And so it goes from people that have a very tiny piece of land and they certify it through our process as a bee safe place, to thousands of acres, people that have large lands, and even cities or schools that have, you know, certified with us. But the original vision was just one place. So we started by here where I live. And now, you know, it's this nonprofit that is pretty big and is completely volunteered. You know, I'm not paid for it. Nobody takes money out of it. It's just coming out of our hearts. And obviously I have beehives, and I'm also a beekeeper now, and I enjoy them very much.
Wow. 600 bee sanctuaries in the United States. Can I have one? Can I create one at my summer home up in the Thousand Islands?
You can do it anywhere. Yes.
I want one. All right. You have to come up in this summer from the Catskills to the Thousand Islands and show me how to create a bee sanctuary.
That would be wonderful.
On my little property. So you came home from the Himalayas and told your friends that the bees were talking to you and you needed to create a bee sanctuary.
Well, I don't know if I said the bee were talking to me, but say okay. I had this idea or this vision or this
insight. Had an idea or a vision. Okay. So I think, couched it a little bit.
Yeah. Sometimes people, you know, you want them to be able to hear you. And you tell them, you know, through words that might create an allergy, you don't want that.
Yeah. They won't really hear you.
Yes.
Wow. I love that. Cause you know, as our listeners, I'm sure are aware, the bees are at risk in our world today and you're doing something about that. Was that part of the initiative for you
I mean, you know, honeybees, we're about protecting all pollinators, not just honeybees. And there are 3,000 species of bees in the United States alone. And honeybees is one of the 3,000 species. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, you know, we know it because it makes honey in, you know, obviously that's what we're interested in most, but really we're more about conservation of the native population of bees. And honeybees are not native to America. I don't know if people know that, but they came from Europe.
I didn't know that.
There was no honeybees here and they were brought. So most of the bees we have here, the one I have are Italian, we call Italian bees, and there's Russian bees. There's kind of two populations. But yeah, they were brought by the settlers. But there was before that, obviously, pollination in this country by thousands of species of bees. Some looks like honeybees a little bit, but most of them don't. They are much smaller. They have different colors. And the thing is that the native bees are much better designed for pollination for the native plants, because obviously they have evolved together over millions of years. So really, when we talk about the collapse of honeybees, aside that we are worried about our almond trees and our almond milk and our crops, it is a bigger problem for the collapse of the ecosystem in general that relies on different kind of bees.
Yeah,
you know, the maple trees and even all the trees, right? A lot of trees rely on that. So, but it's definitely problematic when it comes to crops for human consumption.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's the pollination, the loss of pollination that puts us at risk. Well, thank you for doing that. Thank you for being behind that. So let's go back. I had asked you the second question when you told us about your story of leaving the corporate world, and it was a fascinating story. Tell us more about your journey into shamanism and the retreat center that you have in the Catskills in upstate New York.
Yes, that is, you know, for me, it felt like a homecoming.
Mm.
And I know many people, when they hear the words shamanism or shamans, you know, they have kind of probably, I don't know, I guess those weird ideas about what it is. But ultimately for me, it's a very practical way of connecting to nature. And when I say nature, I include human beings, everything that is alive. And it's the idea, there are many practices and rituals, but it's the idea that everything is alive in the world. That's what animism say, you know, not just human beings, not just bees or trees, but also rocks and rivers and lands and skies and, you know, stars. And that because it is alive, it has its own spirit, it has its own identity. And because of that, we can communicate with it.
Mm.
Like this bee. Right, people might say, well, it was not the bee that talked to you, it was just your own narrative. Maybe, I don't know. Oh, I would challenge someone on that, but and people for thousands of years and still today, most of the general population in the world have this kind of ancient connection. And what interests me about it is that there are different ways to live in relation to each other and to nature. That seems to me that they are way more sustainable and healthy for us and for everything else that is included in that, right? So there is a potential for healing that I think is deeper than superficially treating what we think is the issue in our world. It kind of look a little bit deeper into what's happening.
Beautiful. So do you do individual work or do you do shamanic journeys? What do you do at your retreat center?
Yeah, individual, collective. We bring people on retreat too. You know, I do a lot of my work online also.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, because, you know, it's a kind of a non-temporal, non-local work. I mean, you can do journeying with a drum, the sound of a drum that is recorded, and have as deep of a journey as being with someone that's drumming for you. You know, I think what is interesting, and maybe it will touch your audience in some ways, but, you know, 15 years ago, it used to be a certain kind of audience that were interested in that. I would say, you know, maybe people you would imagine interested in that kind of spirituality. But in the past 5 years, and I don't know if it's because of COVID and the fact people were isolated and people started questioning their lives, but now it's many people from what we call mainstream America that are coming. Yeah. People that have a normal job, people that are, you know, CEO, lawyers, you know, doctors even.
I've heard lately that shamanism is one of the fastest growing religions in the US today, that shamanism is really rapidly growing.
Yeah, despite it's not a religion, right?
But... I know, but you know, that's yeah, the way they say statistics. Yeah. I know it's not.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's people, I think there's a crisis of meaning in our world. I think nobody really can deny that. I think the meaning that we are taught about around capitalism and other things, people start to challenge it and say, is this really working for me? And people are looking for other ways. And shamanism, animism, and other spiritual practices, I think, can give anyone a meaning for their lives.
Well, this is all part of conscious evolution, don't you think? You know, like you say, all these, you know, kind of different demographic being attracted to shamanism right now, and the rise of people being attracted to shamanism, the crisis of meaning that you just referred to. I do think there's a rise of kind of conscious evolution of people waking up and recognizing that capitalism isn't the answer to meaning, that money does not create a life of meaning, success doesn't create a life of meaning. And people are starting to ask that question, you know, if I've won the game, like your journey, like your story, I think that's why it's so powerful. You had won the game of life, if you will. You had done all the things that there was to do on from Wall Street's perspective. And yet you woke up having won it all and even winning the awards, if you will, and said, this isn't my life. And I think a lot of people, as part of the conscious evolution of humanity, are waking up and saying, this isn't it. There's got to be something more.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing, and it's maybe also because, you know, spirituality in general, and that includes shamanism, has been popularized, right? And by Oprah, and famous people are talking about their spiritual practice. And it started maybe with yoga and meditation, but now it's going into kind of those other aspects of spirituality. But one of the common thing I'm seeing is a lot of people coming, and they would be what you call successful. I would say women in their 40s, and, you know, they have the big jobs and they have the kids, and maybe the kids are still home or about to go away. And they tell me, I think I'm living a lie.
Mm.
I just can't pinpoint, right? I have the house, and, you know, I'm pretty comfortable and I have some success, but I don't sleep really well. Mm-hmm.
I say they wake up and say, whose life is this anyway?
Yes.
Whose life is this anyway? What happened?
Yeah, someone asked me the other day that I'm working with, and say, if you could be very honest with someone, with your client, what would you tell them? That you don't really tell them, but if you could tell them anything, I would say you're living a lie. Mm-hmm. You know? And I've said that with kindness and compassion, because, you know, we're all living a lie to a certain degree, right? In some ways, we're trying to align ourselves to our intimate nature. And this is something that can take a lifetime to really discover and understand. But I think people now are feeling the pressure to find that in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. It's like permission to be a little bit out of the system and to start finding things that are more relevant for you.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe a lot out of the system. I mean, you didn't go a little bit out of the system, Angel. You really like jumped off the cliff out of the system.
Yeah, one of the, you know, elder I work with, grandma's a Sri Crow. She's a Native American elder. And she said, you know, my elder, my teacher that is past now, told me one day that our purpose, our past is like a raging river. Mm. And we're standing on the edge of it all the time. And we're really afraid to go in it. And some people might jump in our raging rivers, and most people are going to stay on the edge with their family and because it's safer there, right? But say, you know what happened? At some point, spirits or something is going to take a 2x4 and hit you on the head to throw you in it.
Right, just push you right in.
So you don't want to wait for the 2x4 to hit you on the head, right? I think for me, it was a little bit like that. I get to such a place in my life at some point, I was really pushed into it. There was no way around it, right?
Yeah.
But I think most people, they have this feeling, they're contemplating something that might be not really clear yet, mm-hmm. but they definitely know they are not sitting in a place that is supposed to be where they are, where they have to be, or where they should be in the future.
Yeah. I call that living the default life.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Life by default, you know, it's just the one I woke up into. It's the one that gets prescribed for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when we wake up and live consciously and we enlighten, it's living by design,
mm-hmm.
by soul's prescription rather than by society's prescription.
Mm-hmm.
Live your soul print.
And it requires courage, right? It's not an
easy. My gosh. That's what I was thinking when you were talking about what you did. It's like, that's a really courageous move. Yeah. To the point where I'm sure people thought you were nuts.
Yeah, and I think that's why most people don't do it or criticize it when other people do it or right. name them.
Right.
Because it reflects something about their own, you know, misalignment.
Right.
And that's
fear.
Okay.
Their own misalignment and fear.
And fear, right? But like Grandmother Strico said, you know, you don't want to wait to be hit by it. And sometimes the hit might be a divorce. It might be illness.
An illness,
it might be something very big that says, this is misaligned. Something wrong is going on in your life, right?
Exactly. Well, since you are so wise. Your soon to be daughter, your soon arriving daughter is very, very blessed. And I send blessings to you and your wife and your soon to be arriving daughter.
Thank you.
So I know people are going to want to meet you, hear you, maybe come to the Catskills or work with you online. Angel, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you or hear more about your work?
Well, it can go on our website, thesanctuaryheal.com. You know, we offer a lot of our offering is by open exchange. Some are really cheap or free. Some are a bit more expensive. But we have, you know, online classes where we have one of them that's very popular. That's called Becoming the Mystic, which is about awakening this inner voice, awakening.
Ooh, nice.
This. So it's like an on-demand video online class that I'm offering, people can take at their own speed. And then we have, you know, longer 1-year program and retreats and people that want to travel or come with us to Peru or doing, you know, other deeper immersion. But yeah, I mean, my ultimate prayer or goal or intention is that people don't wait, that they don't put on the back burner a life that is really theirs, like this conscious living, this enlightened living, because it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And it, if you don't listen to the voice, in my experience, it's not going to get easier.
Yes, right.
But yeah, it might be hard at first, maybe, you know, but sometimes we can take little steps, listen to a podcast or read a book or going to a little online class, you know, and keep planting the seeds.
Yeah.
For me, you know, it took me 15 years to hear it. And, you know, I was a bad gardener, I guess, you know, but it was in the making the whole time, right? So, yeah, take one step, whatever that step is for you that works for you.
Angel, it's really lovely to spend time with you this afternoon. And, I hope we can connect in upstate New York at some point. It's really
been a pleasure.
Lovely to spend some time with you. Thank you for being my guest and for your generosity and wisdom and sharing. I really have enjoyed being with you.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Yeah, and come see the bees. They are, you know, coming out of their winter slumber and sleep. And so
I would love that.
Honey, if you come.
All right. Until next time.
Thank you.